Okay, I changed my title slightly. I'm going to discuss a few simple examples of quantum phase transitions where the Luttinger theorem plays an important role. And as you can see from this morning's discussion, that's very important with heavy fermions. So I'll give a couple of examples where the statement of Luttinger's theorem turns out to be different on either side of the critical point. So this is work based on several different papers, collaboration with a number of different people that are listed here. Also, I'd like to ask the chair to allow discussion during my talk, and just so that the total time of discussion and talk obeys the sum rules you wish. Okay. All right, so actually I'm going to start with a completely different topic. You will think it may seem completely unrelated, but I hope to convince you that there is actually a connection, and it's a very useful connection. So I'll talk about a problem I was working on with Stephen Powell for completely different reasons, and it had to do with ultra-cold atoms and the ability in recent years to make quantum degenerate gases of Bose and Fermi mixtures. And I'll just quickly summarize some of our very recent work on it. And it turns out, this turns out to be the simplest example, we think, of a quantum phase transition where there's something, there's a change in the statement of Luttinger's theorem. Then we'll go on to, of course, the problems that have been on some discussion this morning. It'll turn out to have a similar flavor. Is there a pointer? No.
Yes.
Is that's the pointer?
Pointer, yeah.
Okay. Oh, there. Okay. That's the Kondo lattice, and it'll turn out the Kondo lattice is in the simplest version, just a gauged version of this simpler problem. Then I'm going to just have a brief review of ideas of deconfined criticality and how they may apply to the Kondo lattice. And that's mainly speculation. So as you can see, this is a fairly theoretical talk, but hope is ultimately it'll have some experimental impact. All right, so just keep your attention for a while. We're going to talk about something very different, about Bose-Fermi mixtures. So many recent experiments have looked, obtained a Bose-Einstein condensation of, say, lithium, sodium, or rubidium. They've also seen Fermi-like behavior, including measurement of Fermi wave vector in lithium-6, which is a fermionic atom. And now they've also have, achieved degenerate mixture of lithium-7 and lithium-6 with weak interaction. So in condensed matter, of course, we have helium-3 and helium-4 mixtures. So what could be new here? Well, what's new here is that they can tune the interactions between a fermionic atom and a bosonic atom such that there is a molecular state, a bound state of the two, of the boson and the fermion, which is obviously a fermion, so the psi is a fermion. And you can tune the relative energy of this bound state relative to the scattering continuum of two individual lithium atoms. Okay, so the question then, it's an interesting question to ask, then how does the ground state of this Bose-Fermi mixture change as you tune the energy of this molecular state? Now, this particular system has two basic conservation laws. One is that the boson is either a free boson or in a molecule, and the sum of these must equal the total, some fixed number of boson that you put in to begin with. And the fermionic atom is either free or in a molecule, and the total number of fermions must equal total NF. And associated with these conservation laws, it turns out, there are two different statements of Luttinger's theorem. In fact, one of the Luttinger theorem relates to the number of bosons. We can see in a minute. So here's kind of a sketch of the phase diagram. As you're changing the relative number of fermions to the number of bosons relative to the detuning, which is the energy of the molecular state. So I want to begin here, up way up on the left, where there is no Bose-Einstein condensate. So what's happened here, crudely speaking, that each boson has been absorbed by a fermion, form a molecule. And so now you have a species of two fermionic gases. One is just the free fermions, the original fermions, the unbound fermions. And the other is the molecule of a fermion and a boson, which is a separate fermion. So the ground state has two Fermi surfaces. One is the molecular Fermi surface, which is, crudely speaking, a bound state of a boson and a fermion. I mean, the meaning of bound state has no precise meaning here since we're talking about a finite density system. But anyway, if you want a picture in your mind, that's what it is. And then another Fermi surface, which is the fermions that are left over, which haven't found bound states with the bosons. So there's no Bose condensate. The bosons have just completely disappeared. You only have two Fermi surfaces. And what we can prove by the usual types of arguments is that there are two Luttinger theorems here, that the volume in these two Fermi surfaces is separately conserved, and the non-existence of a bose-einstein condensate is crucial for that. So in fact, there's one Fermi surface, which is the Fermi surface of molecules, whose volume is the number of bosons. So the number of boson constraints the volume of this Fermi surface. And then there's another statement, volume of the second Fermi surface, which is the difference, the fermions left over. Yes. Yeah.
In your Hamiltonian, there is no term which couples the two, in which you can, is the number of them separately conserved?
Number of which?
Number of one kind of fermion and the other kind of fermion in your Hamiltonian.
No, I mean, you can only couple them by emitting a boson. So there is a term like this where you have a molecule can emit a fermion and a boson. So as long as there is no bose-einstein condensate, then you can't really couple them. I mean, but there is a Fermi surface whose volume is equal to the number of bosons.
This term is strictly forbidden.
This is allowed. This is there in the term, the Hamiltonian. And to all orders in this coupling, these statements are true. I mean, as you vary parameters, anything you vary, to all orders in interaction, this volume is exactly NB, and this volume is NF minus NB. As long as you don't have a bose-einstein condensate. So that's this is easy to see in some very tightly bound limit, but you can also see that it holds to all orders, and it's kind of interesting, I think. Anyway, so now let's go to the other phase. Let's go over here. Let's lower the energy of the molecular state. And then what happens is that the bose-einstein condensate does form. So you do get a bose-einstein condensate. And you still have two Fermi surfaces. There is the molecular Fermi surface and the atomic Fermi surface. But now their volumes are not separately conserved. Well, this one will shrink, and this one will grow. So the total sum is the number of fermions. But you have two Fermi surfaces for a while anyway, and a bose-einstein condensate. So the existence of bose-einstein condensate, then the appearance of BEC. I mean, there's an order parameter here, which is just the BEC. But you can also view this as a transition in just fermionic terms. It's going from a system with two Luttinger theorems to a system with just one Luttinger theorem. And you can already start to see why I'm discussing this here. Okay, but here, you know, everything is very under good control. We can really work all of this out. So here's, there's only one Luttinger theorem. And for example, if you now go along this line and measure the Fermi wave vectors, then, you know, the Fermi wave vectors are flat for a while. There's no change. And then the moment the bose-einstein condensate appears, then they move around in a way that conserves only the sum of the volumes enclosed. And finally, I guess you can also reach here where the molecules completely disappear. This is where helium-3, helium-4 mixtures would be. You have a bose-einstein condensate of helium-4, or of the boson, and then you have a Fermi surface of the fermions. There's only one Fermi surface at this point. And again, obviously, only one Luttinger theorem. So helium-3, helium-4, in principle, if you tuned up the interaction between helium-3 and helium-4, could eventually go to a system without any bose-einstein condensate, as we hope these atomic systems will go, where you'll have two Fermi surfaces with a new Luttinger theorem. And it's the change in the Luttinger theorem is the precise many-body statement of the formation of a bound state. You know, when you talk loosely in free space, we say, well, you have a bound state here and there, you don't have a bound state. That only makes sense when you have two atoms. When you have a many-body system, this is the precise statement of why there's a critical point and why there's a change. Okay. All right, so this is a good point to discuss this topic, since I'll not come back to things you all know. Yeah. Yeah.
Is it really possible to draw space, or is there some limit
that
some
element of the G will be on the space? We've taken this model system, we certainly checked it's stable to phase separation over a wide range of parameters. Now, I don't know about the experiments. I mean, that's really an experimental question. There's also, certainly for lithium-6 and lithium-7, there's definitely experiments where there's no phase separation by the Rice group. They haven't tuned the Fetchbach resonance yet, but this is, I'm hoping experiments of this type are going to be online fairly soon. These are things that people are working on. Yeah, they could. This is the resonance between a boson and a fermion. You're not doing anything. It's the boson-fermion interaction that has a Fetchbach resonance. It's not the boson-boson interaction. I'm assuming there's no phase separation, and I don't see any fundamental theoretical reasons anyway why that can't be the case. Experimentally, it may be much harder. It's possible. But there is that one experiment of lithium-6, lithium-7, where they don't see any sign of it, as far as I remember. Yeah. Electrons?
We assume that the particles are well defined at the Kelvin surface.
Yeah, so in this, so you can ask what is the. Okay, Z is 2. So if you can ask what is the nature of this critical point, that's an excellent point. So it depends. So now you see at this critical point, this is actually related to earlier discussion. See, here you have two Fermi surfaces. That'll become clear. So you have. So you have two Fermi surfaces which are both rigidly fixed. And when you go to the other side of the critical point, then this one shrinks and that one grows. It doesn't immediately disappear. It shrinks only slightly. So then you can ask what happens at the critical point where the Fermi surfaces suddenly start moving. The order parameter is the Bose-Einstein condensate, which is zero momentum. And if the Fermi surfaces have different radii, then there is no low-energy fermionic particle excitation at low momenta. They're all at finite momenta equal to the difference in the radii of the Fermi wave vectors. So in that case, the fermionic excitations are always well-defined, even at the critical point. And it's just an ordinary sort of Z equals to boson condensation transition, just free bosons. Well, not free, weakly interacting Bose gas that will describe this critical point. On the other hand, if you have a special case where the number of fermions is exactly twice the number of bosons, then the radii of the Fermi surfaces will coincide, and then it will look exactly like the ferromagnetic transition of Hertz and have the same kind of critical properties, and all the whole Fermi surface will become hot in the same way as Hertz and others have computed.
When you move here, you can still define the volume. If the whole Fermi surface is hot,
yes.
You define the volume of Fermi surface as well, because you see it's not really a hole now.
So if you load, if you go to zero temperature, any critical away from the critical point, there is a fixed Fermi volume. That's correct. And even at the critical point, you can define a Fermi wave vector. Yes, that's always the case in everything I'm going to talk about. I'm not sure I understood. So the short end, there's always a Fermi wave vector, even at the critical point. There's always a Leibniz theorem, but there's
the literature says that theorem holds the zeros of the.
Well, all right. Okay.
If it's done, or equal to zero, it would be fine.
Well, on either side of the quantum critical point, if I lower the temperature down to zero temperature, there's always well-defined quasi-particles, and there is a Leibniz theorem. And the statement of the Leibniz theorem is different on the two sides. But right at the critical point, they meet at the same volume.
It seems to me that, as I understand it, the Fetchbach resonance, one can always, at least for isolated molecules and atoms, you can periodically oscillate between them because there is you can have with an RF field a linear coupling in which you can oscillate between the molecular state and the atomic state.
Well, that's if you're conserving energy. But if you're looking for the ground state of the system, then the ground state is either a molecule or an atom.
I was just wondering whether you've talked about what happens in that situation.
Yes.
Presumably, it will become like two hybridized bands.
Yeah, okay. I mean, there could be some time-dependent experiments with the Fermi surface volume oscillator. Yes, it's possible.
That's
possible.
Fascinating.
Yeah, I haven't thought about it at all. Yeah.
So when you condense the bosons, then what's the risk of the Fermi and these into the other bound states that it cubes?
Yeah, so when you condense the boson, then there's no difference between psi and f, as you can see. And that's why there's only one Leibniz theorem.
But does it try and eat out things that's from inside?
Well, it eats out this one. The molecular Fermi surface shrinks, and this one grows. And then eventually this one disappears. And then you just have a BEC and a Fermi surface. They have nothing to do with each other. Well, no, I mean, you just this just is zero, this is gone, and then the bands mix and this band shift and so on. It's a very simple effect. Yeah. The radii of these two Fermi surfaces become the same, and then the fermionic excitations are important at the critical point. They do become overdamped, but all other cases, it's just a very simple critical point. Okay, so you know, it's a very simple system, as you can see, and I guess my purpose in my talk is now to use this as a basis to talk about the Kondo lattice, and in fact, we'll see it's almost the same thing. Almost. So in the Kondo lattice, we have two types of fermions. They're local F moments and the conduction electrons, and you know, various couplings between them, and let's see. So I've written here the Kondo-Heisenberg model. It could also be the Anderson model. What I'm going to say doesn't really matter. I mean, there are certain precise statements one can make which have to do with Fermi surface volumes, which are independent of these microscopic details. Okay, so the number of conduction electrons I assume is nc, and the number of f electrons in the simplest case is just one per unit cell. Okay, so as you know, P.S. Coleman and others have done for a long time, and it's very common in the field, it's very useful to think either in the Heisenberg model or in the Anderson model of this hybridization parameter, this boson B, which is the hybridization between the F electron and the conduction electrons. And so this could be some kind of Hubbard-Chertanovich field, or which eventually becomes dynamic, but it's some kind of local correlator that we can define. But having done that, now you can see the close analogy between this problem and this Bose-Fermi mixture. The conduction electron is the analog of the molecules. It's like a bound state between the F electrons and this slave boson. The F electron is just the analog of the F, and the B is the B. And if you now look at the various conservation laws, it's really, again, very similar. The total number of molecules plus fermions should be total number of fermions, which is 1 plus nc. The one big difference is that there's now not a global constraint on the number of bosons, but a local constraint. That's the only difference, really. But as far as Leibniz's theorem go, that doesn't make that much of a difference. It does change some of the critical properties, but many of the gross properties are the same. So because of this local constraint, now you also have some simple cases, U1 gauge forces floating around to make life complicated. But in thinking about how Leibniz's theorem will change, it doesn't really affect anything. So what are the analogies then? Well, the analogy of this phase with the BEC, so you have just one helium-3 forming a Fermi surface, helium-4 forming a BEC. This is the phase where there's no Feshbach resonance, no molecules around. Well, that's exactly analogous to the heavy Fermi liquid state. So in terms of band structure, you have this F electron, which is initially localized, and then there's the conduction electrons filling up to here. And when you allow for a strong BEC to form, so I'm going to go in the opposite order here, then these bands mix, and you fill up these states up to a Fermi wave vector, which counts all the electrons. So there's only one Leibniz theorem, which is that there's one big Fermi surface, which counts all the electrons in this heavy Fermi liquid state. And it's this flatness of the F band is responsible for the large mass of the electrons. Okay, so now it's useful. Now I want to decrease the BEC. Now the early works on slave bosons, now you started with a dispersionless F band. So at zero temperature, you can, a consequence of the equation that you get is that you're always in this strong BEC phase. This B is just non-zero and strong, and there's always a mixing, and so you're always in the gauge theory language in the Higgs phase. But the F electron, you know, can move via the exchange constant, and that, at least in mean field, apart from the gauge forces, means that you have to have a little, you have to allow for a little dispersion of the F band. So if the F band had a little dispersion, then you can see that, you know, if this was dispersing a little bit and then they mix, as you decrease the value of B, then in fact you get two Fermi surfaces. So you're going to get, this is still the heavy Fermi liquid state, but it now has two Fermi surfaces and a Bose-Einstein condensate. Of course, the BEC is a fake because of the gauge field, but anyway, it's or a Higgs field. So it's just a conventional transition where a new Fermi surface appeared, and now you have two Fermi surfaces, one which is mostly C-like, another which is mostly F-like. And this is again analogous to the two Fermi surface state I had in the previous system. So this is, I guess, goes back to a question I raised in the earlier discussion that even in the context of the heavy Fermi liquid, you can still have a transition where the Fermi surface changes, and now you have a rather different topology of Fermi surfaces, although the total volume is still the total number of electrons. And finally, now we can ask, what is the analog of the no BEC state, which is what I started the talk with, where you just had only molecules and two different statements of Luttinger's theorem. Well, that here is this FL star, what we call the FL star phase, where the molecules form their own Fermi surface, and the total number of molecules are conduction electrons and must obey one Luttinger theorem. And the F electrons, which are now the localized electrons, are also, there is no BEC, and the F electrons form their own quote-unquote Fermi surface. But of course, this is not a regular Fermi surface because of the gauge forces and the local constraint, and that's of course the key difference and what makes this problem much harder, and this is some kind of spin liquid. So what's happened here, right at the critical point, to turn to some of the discussion, is that not some gross change. Before you reach the critical point, there was already a change in the Fermi surface topology. And you had two Fermi surfaces, one here and one here. Still, this is still, you know, density functional theory could give you this. It's just simple, straightforward stuff. And right at the critical point, this Fermi surface becomes hot. And the reason the whole Fermi surface generically becomes hot here and not in the previous problem is because of the gauge forces. So the Z vanishes everywhere on this Fermi surface. And then the Fermi surface disappears because of, again, of the gauge forces, and you just have this separate Fermi surface left. So what happens, the Hall constant is not something that I think people are working on it, but we haven't fully straightened out. But there's, you know, so there isn't a complete rearrangement of Fermi surface, just one sheet of the Fermi surface, which encloses exactly one electron per unit cell, has Z vanishing everywhere, and then it disappears. Sorry, which one?
This one, there is B equal to 0, and then this slide's further, there's also B equal to 0.
So here, the F band has dispersion, whereas this is the old case where you didn't have any Heisenberg RKKY exchange. If you start with a model, at least in mean field theory, with no RKKY, then you always end up here. What we're arguing is that at zero temperature, when you allow for RKKY, there is another phase in this model, which is this FL star phase. Yeah.
What you described is really a quantum phase shift, spinning wave.
Yeah, I'm coming to that perspective in a minute, and with all the references.
One thing that we tried last time was
Gopio. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I know you were working on it. Curious.
We got stuck on some other problems together.
Right.
Both the conductivity and the more conductivity jump in this phase transition.
Okay, well, I'd love to see that transition, I mean, that calculation. Yeah.
What we don't end up on, in good degree of the collaboration, involves what would happen when you appeal to phase position.
Okay, well.
In our session to solve that problem, the paper is going to
be. Well, I would just say that. our philosophy is that we just, you know, we work the very simplest things out and write them up. So I urge you to, before going to all the complexity.
C?
No, C is always. Z, that's right. So this Z at this transition, you know, slowly becomes smaller and smaller and smaller and goes to zero. At the point where B goes to zero. According to Pierce, when you actually compute the Hall constant, maybe it's discontinuous, although I don't know. Yeah. So I'm coming to that point, right. So in this theory, you're getting a spin liquid state. That's correct. Yeah. Absolutely. Well, but I'll address that in a minute. Yeah. Yes, yeah. Why is it only at the quantum critical point? Well, because the gauge field is Higgs'd out in the other, it's in the other phase because of the presence of the B. Okay, you're actually absolutely right. On the FL star phase, the whole phase, there are, if you're in the FL phase, as you're approaching it, the whole Fermi surface becomes hot. If you're in the FL star phase, this Fermi surface doesn't even exist. And the gauge field doesn't couple to these fermions. It only couples over here. So there is still a gauge field in the FL star phase, but it affects the specific heat and some other properties, but it doesn't affect the conduction electrons. Well, you can do this in any dimensions, really. Yeah.
So you expect only logarithmic divergence of specific.
Well, I'm not comparing this to any experiment at this point. We're just trying to understand some simple models. Okay, so another perspective. How am I doing on time in terms of my?
Well, the sample says you have still something like 12 minutes.
Including my discussion time. Oh, gosh. Okay. All right. So very quickly, so how is another way to think about this FL star phase? Again, you start from not, you don't do an expansion in JK as you train to do. You say, well, let's start with a system where JH is large, and then these have formed a spin liquid state of some type. And then once you have a spin liquid, then you can see that the expansion in JK is actually completely controlled. There's no infrared divergences. Perturbations in JK is regular. So this state is stable. And what is this state? Where the F electrons form a spin liquid and the conduction electrons form a Fermi surface, which violates the usual statement of Luttinger theorem. It now has this new Luttinger theorem. I guess I've already said this. And here's another statement that the volume enclosed by the Fermi surface is not the total number of electrons in this phase, but total number of conduction electrons. You removed one from the total number of electrons. So n total minus one. And you can only remove one. You can't remove anything else. And there's an intimate connection between this new Luttinger theorem and the existence of the gauge forces. And that becomes clear when you use some of Oshikawa's arguments. Yeah?
Well, I have a question at this point. It's
important. Yeah. I don't believe that. I don't believe that. I think if you take the formal theorem of Luttinger theorem, it says that let's ignore spin. Suppose everything was polarized. Let's not ignore spin. If you have no magnetic field, then the total volume enclosed by the Fermi surface must be the total number of electrons mod 2 in all cases. The only case where I think you can violate that is, I believe, this case where you have the spin exotic spin liquid state with topological order, and the existence of the topological or the spin liquid is intimately connected to the fact that the Fermi volume here is total number of electrons minus 1 mod 2. Okay, that's what I believe.
That's experimentally disproven.
All right, well, okay. anyway, so as a function of JK, then there's this FL star and FL, and there's various crossovers, and as I just mentioned, answer to Catherine, in this regime, you can get T log T correction to the specific heat because of the gauge field. And the resistivity, at least to the extent we worked it out, there may be some problems with this calculation, according to Leon, is 1 over log T. And it's rather peculiar prediction. But anyway, I think it's the virtue of this model is that it's some well-controlled model where you have non-Fermi liquid behavior and also singularity over an entire Fermi surface, not just at hot spots. Okay. All right, so now, in the remaining negative whatever minutes, I want to discuss sort of a new set of ideas that came out of this work of Senthil and deconfined criticality, is whether this U1FL star phase, you know, perhaps doesn't exist at all. And what you get here is conventional magnetism, but nevertheless, this critical point is still of some relevance. Okay, so the very quickly, let me just give you the buzzwords anyway. So we drew some analogy from the study of spin a half antiferromagnets. So now, when you start with an antiferromagnet on a square lattice and quantum disorder it by adding frustration, one route we believe is you get a VBS state on the other side. Now, one way to think about this transition is you say, well, you take a nail order parameter and write it in terms of some spinner, some Z alpha degree of freedom, which is a bosonic spinner. And the moment you do this, you introduce a gauge force. And so you just write down some long distance theory for these spinners, and you get, you know, the usual bosonic degrees of freedom coupled to a gauge field. And it turns out that this theory in terms of spinners actually does describe this critical point. So you have a Higgs phase here, which is the conventional nail phase, and then you seem to be going to some deconfined spin liquid phase, the analog of the FL star phase. Let me just jump ahead. So, oops, I can't keep track of this anymore. Oh, okay, so S is the mass of the spin-ons, the spinners, if you wish. So here the spin-ons have condensed in the Higgs phase, and you form the nail state. And the naive transition you would expect is to some spin liquid phase where the spin-ons become massive. But for this particular class of models, what we've shown is that there are additional topological excitations, the monopoles in particular, which in fact do not affect the critical theory. They're irrelevant at the critical point. So you have your critical transition here where you think you're going from the nail phase to a spin liquid, from the Higgs to some deconfined phase. And that's, in fact, a perfectly consistent description of this critical point. But if you go to even larger scales, you realize that, in fact, the spin liquid doesn't like to survive and is eventually unstable to a more conventionally ordered state. So the conjecture we had from this is that perhaps something similar is happening in the Fermi liquid condo lattice, where this phase here, the analog of the Higgs phase, the nail phase, and then you lose your B condensate, you go to some spin liquid, which I've just described. I mean, we can show that this, at least under suitable conditions, this FL star is completely stable phase of matter. But in practice, that may be very hard to realize. But nevertheless, I guess the point is that this transition is still a very useful thing to think about, because the length scale, the time scale at which the system realizes this phase is unstable, maybe it's much longer that they don't affect the critical properties. So then your new phase diagram would be something like this. At relatively high temperatures, you do have a transition from FL to FL star with crossovers, which is this is the Fermi liquid coherence temperature, which are controlled by this critical point. So that's where all the interesting crossover and the resistivity and so on would happen. But then at very low temperature, this FL star phase decides that it doesn't like to hang around, and you get some magnetic order conventional confinement. So the one characteristic, you know, we can go into all kinds of details of predictions, which, you know, in these simple models can be made in some cases. But the one important characteristic is the existence on this side of two different length or time scales, one associated with the Higgs, the appearance here of the FL star Fermi surface, which will kind of be present for a while, and then at very low temperatures, the appearance of magnetic order. So at zero temperature, then there's always a standard Luttender theorem, since the unit cell has doubled or whatever on this side. Okay, thank you for the extra time.
Yeah.
No, unfortunately, what happens is that the, if I go to this picture, so the only charge carriers are then here at this Fermi wave vector of the conduction electrons. And those are gauge neutral. They don't couple to any of the low energy excitation. So, and there's a gap creating a B. So, in fact, it's just completely Fermi liquid like. Not in the phase, okay, but in the critical region it will show up, yeah.
What prevents it exactly?
Well, so I think the way to think about it is, it's go back to the first problem I talked about. There it's very clear what's condensing, it's just the bosons. There is a boson here, okay. But here, it's almost the same thing, except the boson is coupled to a gauge field, so it makes it a little harder to see that boson. I mean, it's the Higgs transition, really. Well, the only way you can specify it is by looking at consequences on various observable properties, specific heat, transport, Hall resistance. So we would have to think about the flow of that boson to calculate any of this. So to do this calculation, to get this was a very, we had to solve the Boltzmann equation for the bosons to get this result coupled to gauge field. I don't know what else to say. I mean, it won't be apparent in neutron scattering. But it's as real as, the Higgs boson, any of those bosons, because those are also coupled to Higgs gauge fields.
I have a question about the way you went from your deconfined criticality in the case of the valence bond solid to the Fermi liquid.
Right. That's all conjecture. Yes.
My question was why did you replace the valence bond solid by the Nail state? I would have thought that the analog of the valence bond solid would have been your heavy electron Fermi liquid.
No, the heavy electron Fermi liquid is the Higgs phase because this B boson is completely condensed. I could replace this by a valence bond solid. You could imagine the F electrons form a valence bond solid. So it would be some kind of charge density wave appearing in the Fermi liquid. So it could be, you could also imagine that you get a Fermi liquid again with
Higgs reasoning wrong.
Yeah. Yes, yeah.
Bosonic spin on the antiferromagnetic.
So there is a possibility.
The VBS for the bosonic spin-ons, right. Yeah.
So my question whether I should think of in this picture you have the antiferromagnetic on long distances. Look at the antiferromagnet for short distances, you can see FL star.
Yes, yes.
The question was whether you could imagine it the other way around, that you might imagine that on long distances you have the heavy electron period along intermediate distances and just these spin charge and couple.
It's possible. I think Matthew's may be relevant. If he had used bosonic spin-ons, then that might appear that way. I don't know. So this is by no means an exclusive. There are other possibilities. I would say this is the simplest extension, I claim, of the old theory of the heavy Fermi liquid. And this is how you destroy that Fermi liquid in the most naive way.
Yeah.
conventional male and
Yeah, that's what this local magnetic moment is. But okay, then there's, yeah, that's. So this is a nail antiferromagnet, but it's somewhat different from the spin density wave state in the topology of its Fermi surface. So the way to think about this is the conduction electrons are merely doing their own thing, and the local moments are forming an antiferromagnet. On the other hand, you know, the Doniak picture or whatever, whoever picture, you've got this large Fermi surface with both F and C electrons, and that formed the spin density wave because of hot spots. That would give you a very different topology for the Fermi surface than you'd get here. But I guess in this scenario, I mean, I think it's, as you can see, one very interesting question is just to see whether even in the heavy Fermi liquid phase, there's changes in the number of Fermi surfaces, which are completely conventional in a sense. But seem to be required in this scenario before you approach the critical point. And we also saw that happen in the first simpler problem with the Bose-Fermi mixtures. Condor-bound state? It's yeah, that's Tiger
State. So why C doesn't see the
Well, C is B dagger F, and B dagger F is gauge neutral. Here or here?
Either.
Yeah.
Do you expect the change of Fermi surface?
Well, I don't know what you mean Fermi surface high temperature, but in this whole region, you're going to see. Yeah, so this whole region, the picture is the topology or should look something like this. So this is what that whole region looked like. I mean, this will become hotter and hotter as you raise the temperature, but that will remain cold, and this is what it should look like.
So there's like a total volume?
Yes. I mean, the total, that's always the case. See, both phases, the total volume of the spin-on Fermi surface and the conduction electron Fermi surface, the total number of electrons. It's just that in the FL star phase, there's really two, in some crude sense, two Luttinger statements. There's the spin-on Fermi surface, which has to have exactly one electron, and the conduction electrons have to have exactly NC electrons. You cannot trade between them. That's the distinction between the two phases. And that was also the case in the first example.
On the Fermi liquid side, you actually have a continuous change of the Fermi liquid topology.
Right.
At some stage, there was a guess that it can be realized in 2D J1, J2.
What can be?
This scenario.
You mean the spin liquid? That's a separate, yes. Yeah.
Yeah, and we did numerics, it doesn't work.
Okay, fine.
J1, J2, it doesn't work.
You mean with conduction electrons?
No. This nail to dimer solid. State, nail transition to dimer solid.
Okay.
So it's right. First order phase transition.
All right. Okay. To what? Is there an intermediate between which phases?
Between nail phase, usual antiferromagnet, and dimer solid.
Oh, it's first order.
First order.
Okay.
It's
maybe
usual,
that's
simple first order.
Okay. I haven't made any claims that should be. I mean, yeah. Okay. That's a much more delicate higher order question. I mean, I think. The picture here in this is that, you know, that when you start from the nail state, there are precursor excitations, which are the gauge excitations of the other phase. Whether it's actually first or second order is a very delicate issue depending upon, you know, what the RG flows look like in the particular gauge theory. But even its first order is fluctuation-induced first order. It's a weak first order transition. But that's, I think, kind of a distinct issue from at least these issues that I've been addressing.
No, but it looks like it's usual first
order. All right, fine.
Yeah, look, it's not a first order. Okay.
I think we have
to. You can discuss this later.
We have to stop it. But I have to, I take the liberty as a chairman.
Yeah.
So as a sort of, as a experimental test, would it be possible to say, take magnetic field as tuning parameter, and then observe the Haas von Alphen experiments, and you would see a continuous change of the Haas von Alphen frequency as you tune through the Fermi liquid, going from one sort of What would be experimental consequences in terms of Fermi liquid?
Well, I would say that you should really see one particular Fermi surface in which the lifetime of the particles becomes very short, more so than others. And this is the one which is primarily the F. I mean, that's, I mean, you can also look for the lifetime in De Hausman-Alfvén, right? Yeah.
Okay, well, thank you again, Subir. And